Mike Seawright has been a regular guest on Sunday morning, although never in person until this morning. Ever since the war in Ukraine began, he's been on the ground there, often in dangerous situations, distributing aid. But that's not the only place he goes. Mike is the Aucklander, as we've said before, who was once an investment banker with a yacht. And the yacht disappeared over the horizon many years ago as Mike's own horizon shifted. And he discovered a new purpose in life. He founded the New Zealand charity Relief Aid. And Relief Aid is run by hardworking volunteers on the ground here. And it's also been on the ground in most of the major conflict situations we can think of over the past few years. And as 2024 draws to a close, it has now helped a million people. Mike Seawright, lovely to have you in. Thanks for being able to come in.
Good morning, Jim.
A million, how do you know?
Well, Jim, we count every family that comes to our distributions, every person, family that we visit, everyone that we give something to or help, we count them.
Wow.
And we've been counting them for 10 years now. And I have to say, it's a human business we work in, but I do actually get quite excited by numbers. And as we've inched towards the million, which happened a couple of weeks ago, I must admit, I sat down, put my feet up and had a cold beer in celebration of our teams that do incredible work around the world.
I'll bet you did. You set up Relief Aid to help families in Syria, and now the situation in Syria is front and centre again. This outcome, did you think it would happen?
I don't think anyone expected this outcome, Jim. And I must admit, it's quite an emotional time for our teams and myself. They've lived specifically in northwest Syria. They started working for us in Aleppo City back in 2015. They, our Syrian teams, had given up any hope of freedom, as they would call it. Now, we work very hard to work independently and neutrally, so never taking a side. But when you see the level of brutality that's happened in Syria, it's, I have to say, overwhelming, at least from my own perspective, to see our teams now able to return home. We never thought this would happen, and we certainly didn't think it would be happening in a couple of weeks' time, or over a couple of weeks.
You, 10 years ago, I think, were in Sudan, and you thought there must be a better way of doing aid. Is that how it happened originally?
Yeah, I was working in Sudan, and I'd been working in many conflict zones around the world, and saw that not enough aid was reaching those who desperately need it. So if we looked at Syria, our first place of intervention, lots of help happening in Jordan, southern Turkey and northern Iraq. But if you worked in Aleppo City, we were the only international NGO working in Aleppo City at the fall of that city when opposition-controlled East Aleppo fell to the government of Syria forces. No one was either able or willing to operate in there. And of course it comes at a cost. We lost two staff in 2016 in Aleppo City. Terrible, terrible times that frankly still haunt me now. But what's amazing is our teams picked themselves up, dust themselves off, and went back to work the next day.
You lost staff in Gaza too. We've talked about that before, but I think that also had a huge impact on you and the team.
Yeah, well, for our team who sit there day in, day out, getting bombed, working with their friends and colleagues, it's especially terrible. But when you're leading an organisation, when you're running an organisation, at least from my own perspective, I take the responsibility of their safety and their security very personally. Mm. And when they die, we start to question whether or not we're doing the right job. But once again, our Gazan staff, just like our Syrian staff, they just said, we're going to continue to help our communities, we're going to continue to help our fellow people. With or without Relief Aid, you can leave Relief Aid, but we're going to carry on. So we use their strength to strengthen ourselves and carry on with our job even when the very worst happens.
You see the very best and the very worst of humanity, don't you?
Well, we do. Yeah, and this is, I feel privileged actually to do the work that we do. We're lucky because we see the absolute terrible nature of war. We see homes destroyed, bodies broken, lives lost. But we also see everyday people going out every day and helping their fellow citizen. When I look at this in the context of New Zealand, I'm proud of our doctors and our nurses and our teachers who serve, who feel an obligation to serve. And as a result, I see that in exactly the same way overseas. Incredible people doing incredible things under incredible conditions.
It was a meeting with someone from Rotary in 2015, a chance encounter that led you to Syria in the first place?
Yeah, when I founded Relief Aid, and it was technically late 2014, but practically we only got operational a year later, I'd basically, excuse the expression, pushing stuff uphill. Lots of people I was talking to, I'd ring them, I had friends who had networks and contacts, but in fact we had no track record and no one in fact would back us. And I met a lady, a Rotarian called Margaret Taylor, who said, come and speak to our local Rotary group down in Hawke's Bay. That led to an introduction to our main partner, who we've had for 10 years, Shelterbox in the UK, and that started our very first distributions to 3,000 people in Aleppo City in 2015. A million.
It seems incredible that you can start an international charity here in New Zealand and be an important force for good in Syria and Gaza and Ukraine. That's been a major effort in itself. And I bet nobody would have put money, as you're saying, on you at the start.
Well, none of us knew how to do this. I certainly didn't. Our very first trucks that crossed from Turkey into Syria, our Turkish trucks were bigger than our Syrian trucks, so we had to stack the supplies on the roof and in the cabs of the trucks. We had to learn a lot. But the reason we've been able to be, I would like to think, successful, or at least helping those in desperate need around the world, is people like our comms director, Anne Bully. She started with us in 2016, did a little fundraiser, swimming 10 kilometres from Whale Island to Whakatane. Turned out they raised $40,000, got the entire community on board, and she's worked for us for 40 to 60 hours a week, pro bono, for 9 years now.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I mean, these are incredible Kiwis, and we see this right across New Zealand, incredible Kiwis digging deep, either with their time or with their money, to make sure that we got to the million. And we're going to try and keep doing that to 2 million.
Someone in Dunedin, people can be marvellous, someone in Dunedin who makes fireplaces heard you talking once. What happened as the result of that?
Well, Nigel's another one of those incredible Kiwis. They're in the business of making fireplaces and, frankly, making money. This is, as all businesses, wants to turn a profit. But they also want to do good with their time and their money as well. And so they had a clean cooking stove project. They designed a stove, iterated over 250 times to get the design perfect to make it the most efficient cooking stove that they could develop. And then Nigel heard me on, I think it was NBR, called me up and said, hey, why don't we try this in Syria? And we've been working with them for now, I think, 5 years. Business doing good.
Yeah, no, that's a lovely example. Some of the examples are just would just break your heart, though, from your million people. Your aforementioned colleague, Anne Bully, told me about the brand new red winter jacket given to a young girl called Miriam in Syria to keep her warm, that she was still wearing when your team found her on the road killed by a missile strike. I suppose her dreadful story is just one of so many.
Yeah, Miriam was her name, little Miriam. I must admit, still gives me nightmares. The team sent me a photo of her, broken and bloodied on the road in Aleppo City, still wearing our red jacket. Yeah. This obviously was not the result we wanted. It doesn't always go well. But as we've seen with the fall of the Syrian regime, the Assad government now, if we can keep people alive to the end of the war, then we've done our job. Unfortunately for Miriam, we weren't able to keep her alive, but we were able to keep her warm, at least for a period of time. But her and the picture of her still haunts me to this day.
Yeah.
It's absolutely terrible to see a young girl, with our help or without it, broken and bloodied on the road.
Oh, you will never forget, Miriam. This work doesn't make you cynical about humanity. It's the opposite, in a way.
Well, this work may make me consume a little bit more beer than I should ideally consume. But no, I feel very optimistic about humanity. I don't feel necessarily optimistic about leadership in the world.
Yeah.
These leaders, these despots from all walks of life, from the West, from the East, are doing terrible things to people, their own communities and communities around the world. But when you get down to the grassroots, when you get down to aid delivery on the ground, we're just seeing beautiful people doing beautiful things under terrible conditions, under fire, delivering aid under fire, and yet still, as we see in Gaza, having to feed their kids, find bread for the family, get water for them, somehow wear some reasonably clean clothes and go out every day and move a water truck.
Yeah. Mike Seawright is with us from Relief Aid. So Syria, a new crew in charge, the moderate face of jihadism, the HTS's Abu Mohammed al-Golani favours a free market model and will try and integrate the country into the global economy. But he was hardline al-Qaeda, and we remember the promises made by the new-look Taliban. And it's reported in Syria, I notice that some regions have already made the wearing of the veil mandatory for women again. You'd know all about Syria, which I don't, but it's more diverse than Afghanistan. And so is there more hope that it won't be new boss, same as the old boss? How much optimism is there?
When we talk to our team and we talk to the communities we serve there, everyone at the moment is comparatively optimistic. I think the million-dollar question is, what will the leadership of Syria do going forward? And we look at past rhetoric and current rhetoric, they're actually quite different. What we were seeing back at the start of the war and what we're seeing now in terms of the political rhetoric of HTS is very different. So we are hopeful but cautious to see what will go on in the future.
Of course, and nobody knows the answer to that. I imagine quite a few Kiwis now know about Relief Aid. Are you seeing that reflected in the sorts of donations as well that the older traditional charities receive?
Well, I must admit, we don't look at it at a competitive sense with the other charities of New Zealand. If people want to give, we would applaud anyone who wants to support aid across the world. But I'm thankful for the Kiwis. I'm actually thankful for you, Jim. You've been a long-standing supporter of our work, getting us in here and letting us tell our story, tell the story of the people that we serve. And that's created a groundswell of support. But the reality is, when you look at Lights of Gaza, it costs $50,000 a month to deliver water to 80,000 people. It's extremely difficult to keep that running. Mm. In fact, we've been having to review our operations there and decide what, if anything, further we can do. And as a result, we're always looking for opportunities to tell our story and to remind Kiwis that while we live in a relatively, comparatively lovely country, safe country, certainly, there are lots of bad things happening around the world, and we have a duty and an obligation to help them.
So you're here for Christmas?
I'm thankfully here for Christmas. I'm going to be on the beach and probably cracking into one of those too many beers that I mentioned earlier. But I love New Zealand in the summer. It's definitely the time to come home.
It'll soon be no time for beers. Don't worry about that. Do you ever find yourself in the middle of a war helping people just the same as us, really, these people, and wondering where war comes from? I mean, nearly everyone everywhere, usually, always, doesn't want war, and yet it is always with us, and we could have a world where everyone is fed and housed and safe. Do you ever think about that?
It's a sad indictment on society that war has continued to happen and will continue to happen. And as a result, we've set up Relief Aid looking far into the future, because I personally don't believe that wars will stop around the world. But individual wars do stop. Syria is a good example of that. And while we can't necessarily help every person in every war zone around the world, because our resources do not allow for that, we will continue as wars break out, as they continue to break out, we will continue to help families.
Congratulations on Relief Aid. Has it given you joy over the years? I mean, you decided on a totally different life, didn't you? And tell us how that's been.
I get out of my work, if I look at it personally, I get more out of what I do than I put in. We put in huge hours, travel the world, suffer the consequences of losing staff and those that we serve. But despite all those problems, I feel privileged to do my job. I would never change it. I made a decision to change from corporate work to humanitarian work. Not a single thing will change until the day I die We will continue to try and grow Relief Aid and continue to help more people because I actually think this is the right thing to do.
You're a very good man. All the best for those beers on the beach and having a lovely Christmas at home. Thanks so much, Mike, for coming in.
Thanks a lot, Jim.
Mike Searight from Relief Aid.